The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jen Rogers from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Catster.com and Dogster Magazine. We'll begin with an article today from Catster.com called Why Win Feline Foundation is Pivotal in Cat Healthcare by Steve Dale. Put your paws together for the Win Feline Foundation as it celebrates 50 years of making a very big difference in the lives of cats. Back in the late 1970s, dilated cardiomyopathy, DCM, was commonly causing blindness and even death among many cats. Veterinary cardiologists were working on a treatment. That's when Dr. Paul Pion, then a veterinary cardiology resident at the University of California, Davis, School of Veterinary Medicine, put some puzzle pieces together in his head. He had a hunch, which at that time was considered thinking outside the box. To prove his idea, he required money. It wasn't the usual funding cycle for the Win Feline Foundation, but the Board of Directors and Scientific Advisory Committee decided to take a chance on Pion's hunch that there simply wasn't enough taurine in cat foods. Dr. Pion was right. Taurine is an essential amino acid, which dogs and people can produce on their own, but cats cannot. Today, all pet food companies industry-wide understand how much taurine is required for cats. The result is that since Pion's discovery, veterinarians hardly ever diagnose DCM. No other organization that I know of in the world has impacted the cat as Win. It has been on the forefront of cat health studies for 50 years, says Win's current board president, Sheila Nordone. An impact is the right word. We've always been willing to take some risks, strategically make the right investment for a high reward. How Win Feline Foundation makes a difference. The nonprofit has now funded cat health for 5 decades. Consider what $6 million does to support the work of investigators around the world. Joan Miller, 2017 recipient of the American Veterinary Medical Association Humane Award to honor a lifetime of work and passion in support of felines, was president of WIN for 16 years and served for 20 years on the board. She recalls, a really devastating disease was happening in the cat world. At the time, the disease didn't even have a name. We called it the lymph node illness. We knew next to nothing about it. WIN funded Dr. Niels Peterson at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, veterinarians at the Cornell Feline Health Center, and others who unraveled that mystery we now call feline leukemia. And ultimately from that knowledge, a vaccine was later developed in which the Morris Animal Foundation was involved. Dr. Peterson says that with my infectious disease research in general, particularly with FIP, feline infectious peritonitis, WIN Feline has been right there with me. WIN support has made a significant difference. Susan Gingrich, a WIN Feline Foundation board member who created the BREA Fund in 2005, dedicated to support studies for FIP, says, FIP wasn't only not understood, it was misunderstood. From the time FIP was discovered, WIN made a commitment to find a way to deal with this devastating fatal disease. Dr. Peterson says, finally, today we have a very good understanding of FIP. I've been chasing FIP for a very long time. I refer to it as a worthy adversary. There is now a bright light at the end of the tunnel. We now know what has to be done. Nordone adds, the very fact that we're talking about a possible treatment for FIP is amazing to me. Some studies are breed-specific, such as a simple cheek swab test to help breeders of ragdolls and Maine Coons determine if a gene defect exists for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, HCM, now by far the most common cause of heart disease in cats. In 2002, I began the Ricky Fund to support research for HCM and raised well over $100,000 since. The role WIN plays in every cat's life. Much of what veterinarians do every day was first discovered by research funded by WIN, says longtime WIN scientific advisor Dr. Brian Holub, chief medical officer of VetCorps, who also remains a private practitioner. Veterinarians may have no idea of the role WIN has played. WIN is the best-kept secret in cat health. Wynn's executive director, Vicki Thayer, says, and cat owners don't know about Wynn either, or the role Wynn has played in the everyday life of their cats. Nordone, who was the chief scientific officer at the American Kennel Club Canine Health Foundation for nearly 4 years, says, cat health specifically has been challenging to fund, and that has to change for the sake of all cats. What's next for the Wynn Feline Foundation? In 2017, Wynn Feline Foundation created Cures for Cats Day to be celebrated annually on October 21st. Wynn also offers a free newsletter to keep cat fanciers, veterinarian professionals, and cat caretakers up to date on the latest outcomes of cat research. Looking into a crystal ball, Wynn has been going where human medicine in the U.S. has been tentative. Stem cell treatment and investigators have enjoyed several early successes. A way to treat FIP may be around the corner, and the same may be true for some types of cancers. Currently, Wynn is also funding a study to learn more about how cats may be able to help autistic children. It's about time that America's most popular pet receives the attention deserved, Thayer adds. We need to enhance awareness and celebrate the importance of cats in our lives. Just a few of Wynn's achievements through the years. Number one, Wynn-funded studies first demonstrated that diabetes in cats is best treated with a high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet, against the common knowledge of the time, insulin, and with simultaneous gradual weight loss. A significant number of diabetic cats go into remission with this treatment. Number two, Wynn-funded studies proved why measuring blood pressure in cats is important and how to do it. Three, Wynn-supported studies proved specific treatments to support cats with several types of cancer. Wynn funding also made it possible to, 1, identify blood typing in cats, 2, improve the treatment and prevention of Trichomonas foetus, a significant cause of diarrhea, 3, use a transdermal skin application of the appetite stimulant mirtazapine, which gives cat caretakers an easier way to administer this drug to their cats, as opposed to a pill. And number 4, understand how catteries and shelters can efficiently deal with ringworm. And these greatest hits go on and on. Next, we'll move on to another article from Catster.com about cat tail wagging, the meaning of your cat's different tail wags, by Angie Bailey. Cat tail wagging is far more complicated than dog tail wagging. There are different cat tail wags that mean very different things in cat language. Humans usually associate the action of tail wagging with dogs. Canines are fairly straightforward with their tail communication. Cats, however, are way more subtle in their body language, and cat tail wagging is very nuanced. Marilyn Krieger, certified cat behavior consultant and author, says, although tails are expressive, eyes, ears, and body positions combined with the tail language paint a more complete picture of how cats feel. Cat tail wagging can mean many different things. Here's how to decipher the messages sent by your cat's wagging tail. Number one, what the swish means in cat tail language. Marilyn Krieger advises, the direction and speed with which cats move and swish their tails conveys their feelings. When felines thrash their tails quickly back and forth, it indicates that they are unhappy and want to be left alone. Tails that move slowly from left to right often indicate that cats are mildly annoyed. Sometimes, cats who are playing will swish their tails from side to side before pouncing. This means we should pay attention to the way our cats swish their tails and not make assumptions. Number two, what the twitch means in cat tail language. We've all seen it. A cat is sitting on a windowsill concentrating on nearby birds or rodents when her tail begins twitching. It's not exactly the same movement as the previous mentioned thrashing, but it may look similar. Her eyes, ears, and vocalizations will indicate if she's upset or simply maintaining laser-sharp focus on a squirrel. As with the thumping, the twitch also carries the message, leave me alone. Number three, what the quiver means in cattail language. A quiver is a quick, tiny tail wag. When your cat is excited to see you, she may approach you with her tail in a vertical position, just the tip of it making quick little quivering motions similar to a rattlesnake's tail. Unlike the snake's warning signal, a quivering kitty tail is a welcome sight and is typically accompanied by purring, face rubbing, and sometimes even happy vocalizations. Return the greeting even if you can't quite do the tail shaking thing. 4. What the sleepy flick means in cat tail language. Unlike dogs, who are more than happy to come when called, cats like to mull over the situation and decide if they're worth their time at that exact moment. When food is involved, there's typically no question. All they have to hear is a pop top of a can, and they race into the kitchen like a baseball player sliding into home base. Other times, if they're sleeping when we call their names, they like to play games. Instead of blatantly acknowledging us, they choose to meet us with a subtle, sometimes ever so subtle, flick of a sleepy tail. This is a cat's way of saying, "Yeah, I hear you. I'm just choosing to ignore you." This type of tail wagging is actually a sign of contentment, because your cat is telling you that she feels comfortable remaining asleep in your presence. The bottom line, however, is that cats are going to do everything on their terms, which is no surprise to anyone who shares their lives with a kitty. The bottom line on cat tail wagging. A cat's tail is really a barometer for her feelings. Cat tail wagging is a way to communicate those feelings with us, but we must consider the entire picture, including non-tail body language and overall demeanor, before accurately interpreting it. When we learn to read the messages our cats are sending us, we will respond accordingly and develop a trusting, respectful relationship with our beloved felines. Our next article from Catster.com is titled "Tragedy Turns to Triumph for Heloise the Cat" by Denise LeBeau. Heloise survived an accident that left her with serious health issues. See how things came together to give Heloise a great life despite her challenges. Heloise, a beautiful tabby with piercing jewel-green eyes, was adopted out by the Humane Society of Northern Utah. One night she went missing, and her adopters were frantic. She came back 2 days later, but something was very wrong. Heloise was limping, and worse yet, she had no control over her bowels or her bladder. Their veterinarian believed she was hit by a car. She didn't have any broken bones, but there was a lot of bruising and swelling. After 2 weeks of medication, she was doing better. Her gait improved and she gained more control over her bladder, but she still dropped urine and dropped feces throughout the house. Heloise finds a second chance in a sanctuary. After a few more weeks, her adoptive parents brought Heloise back to the Humane Society of Northern Utah in tears. They loved her dearly but couldn't handle her situation. The sanctuary manager, Kelly Payton, welcomed the kitty back with open arms. Unsure what life would hold for Heloise, the organization made a lifelong commitment to do all they could for her. Even if she lived out her days at the rescue, she would be cared for. It wasn't a forever home, but she would be loved. "We took her to our vet for more extensive tests," says Celeste Bailey of HSNU. Nerve damage at the base of the tail was determined to be the issue. At the time, removing her tail wasn't believed to be able to fix her problems. Heloise entered the sanctuary, a series of trailers with several cats per trailer, where volunteers and an on-site caregiver take stellar care of all their charges. Living in a multi-cat trailer proved problematic, as Heloise's erratic pooping was a health risk for the other kitties. Kelly's husband, Bill, built a special cattery just for her with a wire bottom so she wasn't standing in her own excrement. It was outfitted with cozy blankets and cat beds, too. It was comfy, but it still wasn't a home. "We honestly thought that Heloise would be one of our lifer kitties," Celeste says. "We have a few of them with serious issues that make most adopters not want them." Celeste indicates potty issues is one of the biggest deal breakers for many people, but not for their volunteers. One of their foster folks, Shay Johnson, has a huge heart when it comes to kitties. Shay has a cat who's been wearing diapers for years. When Shay heard about Heloise, she knew she had to give this wonderful cat a try at a normal life. Moving forward with Heloise, Shay connected with the veterinarian, and they decided it would be best to amputate Heloise's tail. Heloise had no feeling left in it, and being a pro, Shay knew having Heloise tailless would make diapering much easier. Shay is now working with Heloise to get her used to daily bathing and the diapering process. "I personally don't think anyone would have adopted her the way she was," Kelly says. "Shay loves her, says she needs her, and she's willing to care for her. Heloise will have to have Neosporin on her female parts because she also leaks urine and it causes ulcers." Shay's experience with her own neurological kitty, Esau, is a guiding beacon for how to help Heloise. Esau was born without a tail and has been incontinent for his whole life. Shay is committed to caring for Heloise in every way and thinks Heloise will also become a cherished family member. "Esau is happy and well-loved kitty," Shay says. "With a little work, Heloise can be happy in a home, too." As the saying goes, many hands make light work. Many hands have made Heloise's life turn from tragedy into triumph. Heloise doesn't know she's different, but she sure knows she's special. Now we'll move on to Dogster Magazine, and we'll begin with an article titled Demystifying Pet Insurance. What is it? What does it cost? And is it really worth it? By Jackie Brown. You might be surprised to learn how common pet insurance is outside North America. In Sweden, about 60% of cats and dogs have medical insurance, says Daryl Rawlings, chief operating officer of Seattle-based Trupanion. In the UK, 27 to 28% of pets have medical insurance. But in the United States and Canada, less than 1% of pet dogs and cats have medical insurance. But is pet insurance a good investment or not? Many people don't understand how it works and are confused about the different policies, options, and companies. Each company's policies are different, and it isn't always easy to wade through the insurance speak to understand your best option. What is it? Pet insurance reimburses you if your pet becomes sick or injured with something that is covered under your policy. It does not reimburse you for well pet services like spay or neuter, annual blood work, vaccines, or dental cleanings. Some insurance plans exclude things like cancer or hip dysplasia, but you might be able to pay extra to add a rider to your policy. Other plans cover everything, as long as the condition is not pre-existing. Pet insurance makes financial sense if you have a new healthy puppy. Puppies are the least expensive to insure, and we all know how much trouble they can get into. Good thing they're cute. One major accident or illness could make a policy worthwhile. The older a dog is, the more expensive it is to insure him. Financially, it might not make sense to buy new insurance for a senior dog. Any pre-existing health conditions will be excluded. Some insurers even decline coverage to dogs over a certain age. If your dog is a young adult and healthy, you should be able to find a policy with a reasonable premium. Why get it? If you have pet insurance, you might do less hemming and hawing when it comes to decide if your dog needs to see the vet. A lot of people don't have a lot of disposable or discretionary money left at the end of the month, Rawlings says. Pet owners without insurance aren't going to the vet because it's nerve-wracking and they don't know if it's going to be $3,000 or $5,000. But if you have insurance, you don't have to worry about being able to afford the care. It's easier for a lot of pet owners to pay a small amount every month rather than be faced with a huge vet bill all at once. We as Americans all live month to month, says Carol McConnell, Doctorate of Veterinary Medicine, MBA, Chief Veterinary Officer for Nationwide, formerly Veterinary Pet Insurance. When you're faced with that random unforeseen event that could have significant financial consequences for you, you don't have to worry about it if you have insurance. It's no secret that veterinary prices have gone up over the years. Insurance can help bridge the gap for many pet owners. If you look at the cost of services from 10 or 20 years ago compared to now and the availability of special care, Dr. McConnell says, the medicine has evolved and the prices have gotten higher. How much does it cost? Annual premiums are based on several factors, including your dog's breed and age, whether he is fixed, and where you live. Sometimes you may have to choose from varying tiers of deductible, low, mid-range, and high. The higher the deductible, the lower the annual premium will be. Pay close attention to the deductible. Your best option is a lifetime deductible. Once you reach it, you never have to pay it again, no matter how many times your dog sees the vet. Your next best option is the annual deductible. Once you reach it, you're set for the year. Some deductibles are per condition slash incident, meaning you pay the deductible just once a year for the same problem. Avoid plans with per visit deductibles. Every time your dog sees the vet, you must pay the deductible before anything will be covered. You might be able to select different tiers of payout for claims after meeting your deductible. Low, for instance, 80%, mid-range, 90%, and high, 100%. The higher the payout, the higher your annual premium. Final decision. So is pet insurance really worth it? The answer is different for everyone and every dog. You might buy an insurance policy for your puppy and never need to use it. On the other hand, one major medical issue can cost into the thousands. For example, a California pet owner was glad for the Trupanion policy when his 3-year-old Newfoundland had to be treated for eating 7 baby pacifiers. The payout, $5,397.30. Pet insurance provides peace of mind and takes the thought of cost away from taking care of furry family members, says Elise Donnarumma, veterinary manager for Pet Plan Insurance based in Newton Square, Pennsylvania. It allows everyone to focus primarily on quality of vet care and makes cost of care secondary. Whether it's for yourself, your pet, or your car, buying insurance is always a gamble. You might never need it, but if you do, you'll be happy you have it. Next, we'll read an article titled, What to Do on a Pet Food Recall, by Charlotte Reed. It's up to you to be vigilant and informed before, during, and after a recall. The United States pet food market made approximately $25 billion in 2016, according to Zion Market Research, and is projected to rise above $30 billion by 2022. Along with this positive growth comes increased product recalls. As a result, pet parents should be armed with proper information to handle these unfortunate events, not only for their own pet's health, but for the safety of the greater pet community. It is naive to think a pet food recall only affects the consumer. A recall, in fact, has a ripple effect, says Michael Fleck, veterinarian of the Animal Medical Center in Bradenton, Florida. It could affect your pet, your health, other pet owners and their pets, and even feral animals, and thus the larger ecosystem. He adds that it's important to understand recalls and follow suggested Federal Drug Administration, FDA, guidelines and best practices. What's a recall? The FDA defines a recall as when a product is removed from the market or a correction is made to the product because it is either defective or potentially harmful. There are three types of recalls. One, by the company itself. Two, by FDA request. Three, by FDA order under statutory authority. How does a pet parent learn about recalls? The key is to stay informed. Since recalls occur in real time, you should seek updates year-round about your brands using websites like the Federal Drug Administration, FDA.org, and the American Veterinary Medical Association, AVMA.org. You can also register for email alerts from the Humane Society, follow the FDA on Twitter, and set up Google alerts for the latest news about your brands. Why are pet foods recalled? Most pet foods are recalled for bacterial contamination, salmonella, contaminants like melamine, 2007, and foreign material in bags of dog food, such as pieces of blue plastic from a broken conveyor belt or metal shards from broken equipment. It is important to note that not all recalls are a result of companies' purposely negligent behavior, Dr. Fleck says. Still, consumers must be vigilant for pet safety because mistakes do happen. My pet food has been recalled. What now? When a company recalls a food item, the FDA and the company note that specific flavor, variety, type, batch, and lot numbers on their websites, which is why you should keep the food bag or write down the information before putting the food into another container. Additionally, the company generally distributes a press release for news pickup. If your food brand matches the recall, immediately stop feeding that food to your dog. As an audit precaution, store recalled food samples in the refrigerator in an airtight container for possible later FDA testing. Keep barcodes and batch information, and take pictures from the bag or container. If you've already disposed of the food, be sure no other animal, including a feral one, can consume it. This can extend harmful effects to the larger ecosystem. If your pet has eaten the recalled food, consult a veterinarian immediately. Fleck says that even if symptoms are not immediately apparent for the safety of your pet, get blood panels, x-rays, and possible further testing depending on the reason for the recall. After getting veterinary advice, report the incident to the FDA. Complaints can be filed electronically through the Safety Reporting Portal, or you can phone FDA Consumer Complaint Coordinators. Numbers are on the FDA website, fda.gov. Reporting requires detailed product information, a description of the product's problem, and the description of how the pet and how he's affected. FDA representatives review reports to determine additional follow-up, which may include collecting a food sample or pet diagnostics and analysis. Reporting the incident ensures ongoing pet food safety and monitoring. Recalls due to bacteria or other contaminants like salmonella can also affect your family's health, so experts agree that a pet's food and water bowls, feeding mats, other utensils, and even the eating area should be washed with hot, soapy water and sanitized with mild bleach as extra precautions. Once reported to the FDA, report the incident to the pet food manufacturer and the store where you purchased the food. The store may issue a full refund for the recalled product, and depending on how the pet was affected, you may even be able to recoup your vet bills from the manufacturer. This could be a lengthy process, and legal representation may be necessary to resolve the matter. Staying with the brand. The reason for the recall and how the company handles the situation often determines if a pet owner continues to use the product, says Debbie Phillips Donaldson, editor-in-chief of Pet Food Industry Pet Food Forum. She suggests evaluating the company's transparency, helpfulness, and sympathetic response, as well as reviewing its website. Phillips Donaldson even suggests consumers review company recall history, FDA warning letters, failed inspections, or other issues, most of which are online. Lastly, all those companies take precautions to protect pet health and safety. It's up to all consumers and pet owners to be vigilant and informed before, during, and after a recall. Finally, today, we'll read something from Dogster and Wags called Mobile Man by Pamela Mitchell. Derek Campana makes animals whole. His prosthetic and orthotic devices have increased mobility for more than 20,000 pets since 2004 when he founded Animal Ortho Care in Sterling, Virginia. Through education and innovation, Derek aims to significantly increase that already impressive number. 90% of the dogs who come to us for help can't get it, he says, explaining that when a canine has cancer in the front foot, for example, most veterinarians will take the entire leg to avoid future trauma to the stump. A prosthetic requires a partial leg to fit, which Derek speaks about at veterinary conferences around the country. I talk to vets about doing amputations with a prosthetic in mind. In addition to dogs, the most famous being Hudson the Railroad Puppy, the Virginia company has helped cats, goats, birds, horses, and even elephants after illness, injury, or birth defect has affected their ability to walk. Derek has pioneered the use of plastics in animal prosthetics, which make the devices affordable, $1,000 to $1,300 for a dog to more pet parents. A 50% discount to animal rescues, sanctuaries, and humane societies further expands their use, as do monetary and raw material donations by the Plastics Makes It Possible campaign. Derek's other innovations include the use of plastic-based wraps and braces that reduce pain and heal injuries in joint areas, such as the elbow, knee, ankle, and hip. As with the prosthetics AOC makes, these orthotic devices are customizable via casting kits that can be used in a veterinary office or home. He also has created off-the-shelf products, such as an Achilles brace that can help dogs avoid costly and invasive surgery in many cases. As for the animals Derek was not able to help in the past, he says hope exists. We can learn how to design around certain issues. We can teach vets to change their procedures. There will be a dog in the future that we're able to treat, and we'll take that success and apply those practices to dogs we previously had to say no to. We've run out of time for today's episode of All About Pets. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.